Ralph Schoenman,
and Maya Schoen, along with
Ralph Pointer.
We're here today, March 8th, to provide an update on the case of Lynn Stewart. Wednesday, February 29th, at the U.S. Courthouse, 500 Pearl Street, Manhattan, there was a reconsideration of Lynn's sentence before the appellate court. This is the resentencing of Lynn by Judge Codal to 10 years from his original sentence of 28 months. Ralph Schoenman and Ralph Pointer, along with hundreds of people, attended this hearing. We're going to discuss that and also to provide a further update about Lynn's condition at the Federal Medical Center in Carswell, Texas. Ralph?
Well, what we found was that the courtroom was packed, and the number of people who packed the courtroom was duplicated by those who were right outside it, and then again outside the building in support of Lynn. The atmosphere was very dramatic, and there were three judges who were seated on behalf of the Second Circuit, Judge Robert D. Sack, and Judge John M. Walker, Jr., and Judge Guido Calabresi. And Harold Farringer, the noted civil liberties attorney who has appeared so many times before the Supreme Court and before appellate courts, was acting as the attorney for Lynn Stewart before the judges. His focus was on the First Amendment issues that are inherent in the sentencing by the Second Circuit, or should put it correctly, the demand that the Second Circuit made upon Judge Codal below to increase Lynn Stewart's sentence from 28 months to something much more drastic, something approaching the 30 years demanded by the Justice Department of Barack Obama and Eric Holder. And in fact, what Judge Codal did was to increase the sentence up to 10 years, nearly four times the sentencing that had been imposed by him prior. So the issues before the court were the legitimacy and basis for such an arbitrary and extraordinary increase in sentence after the judge had already ruled. And Harold Farringer focused on the First Amendment issues because the basis, the putative basis for the Second Circuit demanding of Codal that he increase the sentence was that Lynn had not shown remorse by virtue of her statement that she could do the sentence standing on her head, and secondly, because she was asked the question by Amy Goodman and by others as to whether she would again do what she had done with reference to the Sheikh and her defense of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. And she said to law students, as she did to Amy Goodman, yes, I would do it again, perhaps differently, but I would certainly do that, referencing her intent to or willingness to defend the Sheikh, a man who she had considered and in fact shown to be innocent, as had Ramsey Clark, her co-counsel, a man who had not any evidence brought against him of any merit, of any substance, but quite the contrary, the gravamen of the defense that Lynn Stewart and Ramsey Clark had prepared and presented was the evidence that showed that it was the state, the government, the FBI, that was involved in preparing the plot, implementing the plot, and framing the Sheikh.
I'd like to interject here that what the court did, and Farringer pointed out, is that they were basing this resentence on protected speech. When we speak on TV or we speak before audiences and we make comments, we are protected by the First Amendment. These were not comments that Lynn had made in court as testimony or had been provided as any evidence throughout her trial. And thus it is incorrect, and Mr. Farringer pointed out chapter and verse as to the law, why this was protected speech and why this was judicial error when there had been the resentencing. And there were other reasons of judicial error that he pointed out, with much case law from Supreme Court cases, appellate court cases, to show why the resentencing was a misstep, a thorough misstep. But Ralph Pointer, could you describe how these judges treated Harold Faringer, who is one of the most renowned attorneys, and we're very fortunate that he took up the case of Lynn Stewart.
One of the most interesting things that happened in the court was the treatment of Harold Price Faringer as opposed to the treatment of the prosecution. It was almost laughable. When Mr. Faringer would begin to answer a question, another judge would cut into him. And they did this consistently. And then when the prosecution presented its case, the judges were seeming to try to help him and never interrupt him, so much so that he had time left over at the end of his presentation. So it would be funny, except Lynn's life is at stake. But without going in deep into the case of Lynn and the issue of the blind sheik, one of the things that I've said over and over and over again, Lynn's only crime was to prove the sheik innocent and the government guilty. And the interesting thing here is that Lynn has proven to be a truth teller, a person who was able to perceive the future by understanding exactly what the past had been. And what that involves is American foreign policy. And you can understand today, when you hear of all of the saber rattling on Iran, why they do not want a voice such as Lynn Stewart's telling people what is about to happen, what injustices this imperialist government is about to bring upon other people around the world. So this was a strange situation where they were saying she should be remorseful, when in fact they should be remorseful for not listening to the prophet. When she sat on the witness stand and said, people with the heel of the boot of oppression on their necks will throw it off by whatever means necessary. And she was talking about Hosni Mubarak, who is now on trial for his life in Egypt for the crimes that he has committed, for the releasing or the sending of the Secret Service of Egypt upon the people. So here Lynn is in jail, and she's hurting health-wise, but she's very, very sharp mentally. And if anyone cares to look on the website to see how she writes, how clearly she sees the issues, please do so. Now, the other day, I visited Lynn over the weekend from the 2nd to the 6th, 4 days of visiting, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And we discussed the case over and over again. And we also talked about sentencing, but we dealt with her health. And her health is a major issue. And there were those of us who were furious that there was no fight for Lynn to get her operation before she went into jail. But what had happened was, after this 4 days of discussion on her health and the issues, one of the supervising guards came who had told me when Lynn first walked into prison, she had worked there a long time, and she had a feeling about people. And she says her first feeling was, this lady shouldn't be here. Then she reviewed Lynn's case, obviously, as everybody else does, in the newspapers, on the web, and she got it right. But on the way out, when she said, quitting time, everybody has to leave, she had made a statement to Lynn. She says, well, God has a reason why you're here.
This prison guard was so impressed by all that Lynn has been able to do for the other prisoners, including helping them get out of prison.
Exactly. And when she says there are reasons why you're here, God has sent you here to do your work. And as quick as a wink, Lynn answered, would you please have God send me back home? And it was a funny moment, and we all laughed, and we ended the 4 days of discussion in laughter, because Lynn was so quick and so serious and so sincere in her request to be sent back to her former life. So I say this in conclusion, Lynn's body isn't doing so well, but her mind is right on, and her spirits are perfect. No anger towards the God, just a friendly, quick, cheerful laughter under those circumstances. And as I was flying back, I thought again why the government doesn't want this clear, pleasant voice out there.
Well, I would like to say about this that the very activity in the courtroom elucidates what's at stake. Low-key, but firm, Farringer was demonstrating that these are fundamentally First Amendment issues, that Lynn Stewart's crime presumptive of having issued a press release on behalf of her client, a press release which was replicated by her co-counsel Ramsey Clark multiple times. Lynn Stewart, by the way, who was described by the government as the hub of communication with the Sheikh, had seen the Sheikh on two or three occasions, whereas Ramsey Clark had seen her almost continuously. And the same applied to the statements that were put out publicly on behalf of the Sheikh. And it should be remarked upon that this presumptive crime, for which they were even claiming perjury on the part of Lynn, entails violating an administrative measure, the special administrative measures, which are SAMs, which are to prevent defense attorneys from making public statements of their client or on behalf of their client. Violative, of course, of the First Amendment in the first place, but administrative decrees, so that even in breaching them, as both Ramsey Clark and Lynn Stewart did out of principle, the penalty does not rise to legal consequence. The penalty would be to tell the attorney they can't continue to see their client unless they agree to abide by the SAMs. So what's at stake here, as Farringer was very clearly pointing out, was a First Amendment issue, namely the right of an attorney to issue a statement on behalf of their client. And to have that represented as perjury was not something that even Judge Kotel had taken as a rationale for sentencing. And the Second Circuit judges had attacked Judge Kotel's failure to reflect what the Second Circuit deemed to be Lynn's perjury by putting out statements after the attorneys had nominally accepted the SAMs that had been imposed upon them. I think it's instructive to note that every time, as Ralph mentioned, Farringer attempted to put on the record the First Amendment issues that obtain here, the judges got agitated, angry, and interrupted not only Farringer but each other in their anger, their voices rising, and the louder their voices got, the emptier their heads got.
Before Lynn issued a statement on behalf of the Sheikh, other attorneys had issued statements on behalf of the Sheikh, and nothing was said. This would inform Lynn that it was okay, because how is one to know that they are going to be targeted for special treatment? And it must also be said that it is stated in the SAMs, if you disobey the SAMs, you may be precluded from visiting your client. This is in the papers. This is in the literature of the SAMs. So now they take it from being precluded from visiting your client to a criminal offense calling for 10 years.
Not just a criminal offense, but an act of an engagement in a conspiracy for terrorist act.
The
it's
failure
so
on the part of the authorities to take any steps against the co-counsels of Lynn Stewart, who issued statements routinely on behalf of the Sheikh, was described by the defense counsel as a bubble. Namely, Lynn Stewart was entitled to the bubble of assumption, resting upon the fact that no measure was taken against her co-counsel for carrying out their responsibilities to their defendant in using the media to articulate what the issues were, both in the mind of the defense counsel and on the part of the defendant. The bubble has to do with the question of presumptive perjury, which is such an outrageous stretch. But the issue before us is the First Amendment content of Lynn's behavior and acts, which Farringer was relentless in putting on record. These are First Amendment issues.
When the judges got into the question of the character of Lynn Stewart, it was almost laughable because one of the things that they had previously said at the same hearing was Lynn Stewart didn't accuse any of these other attorneys of making statements in her papers. And then 2 minutes later, they're saying, gee, we're worried about her character. And, you know, she must be penalized for some flaw in character. And the easy answer to that is just look at Lynn's life. And that is character. And we, the only reason why we were in court was because of Lynn's good character. And to have these judges sit and say foolish things like, we're here because we're concerned about Lynn's lack of character. Maybe it's because they do not know what character is. They have never experienced anything but poor character.
Well, the question of character was posed in relation to why the judges were entitled to assume that Lynn acted in good faith when she relied upon the failure of the authorities to take any action when her co-counsel had released statements. And, of course,
precisely,
the question of character was addressed by Judge Kotel in his original sentencing when he stated on the record that Lynn Stewart's life was one of her contribution not only to her many clients and defendants, but she had made a notable contribution to the nation at large. So that the statement about her character was well articulated by Judge Kotel, and much of what has to do with the arbitrary nature of the appellate court's action is that appellate courts are not supposed to substitute themselves for the judge below. The judge below is the finder of fact, and consequently everything that the judges in the Second Circuit said was, as one of their members had said, worthy of a letter to the editor without any basis in law itself. They were attempting to substitute themselves for the judge trier of fact, the judge of record below, which is completely unconstitutional. It should be noted that Robert Sack, who was leading the fray in interrupting and in demanding heavy sentencing for Lynn, has a rather interesting career. Judge Sack is a member of one of the law firms that's most associated with the repressive apparatus of the United States, Patterson, Belknap, Webb, and Tyler. And he was a partner, interestingly enough, with Michael Mukasey, partner with a man who was the judge in the trial who sentenced the sheikh and before whom Lynn was appearing, yet he did not recuse himself. Another partner was Rudy Giuliani. Another partner is the son-in-law of Richard Nixon. And indeed, this is a law firm that represents all of the major corporations and the repressive apparatus within the United States. The second law firm with which Judge Sachs is a partner is the largest globally, with 1,000 attorneys and 2,000 staff and 17 offices around the world. The notable partners involved include Theodore Olson and Eugene Scalia, a host of government officials that are associated with the right wing and with repressive politics. And then there's John Walker, who is the cousin of President George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, who is noted for having been the representative of the State Council for the Republic of Botswana in South Africa during the period of Verwoerd and Forster. He was representing one of the Bantustans. His responsibilities as Assistant Secretary of the Treasurer were that of federal law enforcement training. He oversaw the Secret Service, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and the Office of Foreign Assets Control. So we are dealing here with judges that have a long association with the repressive apparatus in the United States. And another law firm of which Judge Walker is a partner is Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn, which had represented Standard Oil way back when the U.S. government was seeking antitrust action against Standard Oil. Walker was representing Standard Oil, or his firm, I should say. It's important to understand that these are judges associated with the most retrograde features of the American ruling class. The third judge, Guido Calabresi, who is a legal scholar. His students include Judge Michael Mukasey, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alioto. So it's fairly evident that the judges have a very great stake in sustaining the suppression of attorneys who expose the nature of the state and defend those who are the targets of the power of the state in the U.S. And it's brought home in particular, I should say, by the speech on Monday, the speech of the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, whose Justice Department is pursuing the incarceration for an extended time of Lynn Stewart. His speech was a sweeping assertion of quasi-dictatorial powers, including the power of the United States President to sign death warrants secretly for any person, including U.S. citizens, without judicial review. In his speech, Holder praised the Guantanamo Bay military tribunals and held them up as a model. "I have particular faith in the framework and promise of our military tribunals," he proclaimed. And he argued in favor not only of the constitutionality of assassination, but he made an extraordinary distinction between what he called due process and judicial process. And he represented that instead of the Constitution guaranteeing due process, the Constitution permitted what he called judicial process, whereby the state is capable of seizing people, holding them indefinitely without trial, killing them without violating any constitutional requirements, and indeed establishing a police state if it were considered appropriate and necessary by the executive. And his justification for this is the war on terror. "We are a nation at war," Holder declared. "The United States is in its hour of danger." And the principle of judicial process as opposed to due process was invoked to effectively nullify the Bill of Rights, nullify the protections of free speech and free association and free assembly, and wipe out the Constitution in a wave of the hand. That's what's at stake here with Lynn Stewart's persecution, because the issues are the justification of a war on terror that establishes an arbitrary police state for every citizen of this country. So the issues could not be more drastically drawn, and the consequences for the public at large are concentrated in the fate of Lynn Stewart.
Well, in case anyone missed when you were talking about Verwoerd and Botswana, that was the period of apartheid or slavery in South Africa that these judges were supporting with their representation, and we hear nothing of that.
One last point about this particular judge, Judge Walker, the cousin of Bush Sr. and George W. Bush. The good judge was driving his vehicle in Connecticut at night, and he ran over a traffic cop, killing him outright. He wasn't detained. He wasn't arraigned. The police did not question him. They did not take his blood alcohol levels. No charge was brought, not involuntary manslaughter, zero. It is with impunity that the rulers of this country protect themselves and inflict arbitrary judgment upon the people over whom they preside.
I'd like to remind our listeners, you can write to Lynn at Lynn Stewart, and her prison number is 53504-054, and that's at the Federal Medical Center, Carswell, Carswell, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127. And if you can send money for Lynn's commissary to allow her to purchase books and personal items, you would do that with the Western Union blue form specifying Lynn Stewart and her prison number, 53504-054. You've been listening to an update of the case of Lynn Stewart. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen, along with
Ralph Boyer.
Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta